Coming up on today's Next Fan Up podcast, you're going to hear this.
If you're a team, would you give up that the money and the pick it would take to get a guy like Wilkerson, who has been one of the better players at his position since he came into the league?
No.
You're also going to hear this.
Is that going to be our thing now? In every show, we have to make sure we get in a shot on special teams. I like it, if that's the case.
Don't forget this.
What kind of pie was it? I was thinking it might have been humble pie after the Patriots.
Chicken pot pie.
Where's the special guest announcer? Oh, she's at work. Let's get the podcast started. No.
Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winning.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
Oh, we are 1 week away from free agency, and we're 1 week past the NFL Combine. What are we to do as NFL super fans? Hello, everyone. I am Pod Vader. I am joined by three super fans this week. We also have a very special guest interview towards the end of the program. Scott Wright of DraftCountdown.com joining us to recap the combine that happened just last week. So you'll have that to look forward to. Let me introduce you to the three guys that we've got on the show today, and then we'll get into some business because we got a lot to cover here. And one of those things is we're going to take a trip back to 2009, the very first Superfan Super Mock Draft, and we'll get into that in just a moment. But first, let me introduce who I've got here. As always on Thursdays, I've got our Steelers Superfan, Greg. Happy Thursday, Greg.
Well, happy Thursday, Jay. I'm sitting here in the shadows of the factory of sadness at work, so I'm doing my best.
No work on Thursdays, Greg. No work on Thursdays. Keep that mantra going. Also turning into a regular on Thursdays, we have our Redskins superfan from across the pond in Scotland, not England. That is Neil. Hello, Neil.
Thanks a lot, Pod. And for the other guys, I have spent most of the week wondering if we've made a little bit of an error on the Next Fan Up podcast, and that we probably should have hit Pod with a non-exclusive franchise tag, so that if we do lose you to the Patriots front office, at least we'll get two first-round picks in return.
Wow, I'm honored. I don't think I'm worthy of two first-round picks, but, you know, and I'm sure Andrew, our Jets superfan, would agree that I'm not worthy of two first-round picks, but Andrew somehow weaseled his way onto the Thursday podcast as well.
I mean, as a Jets fan, I would love if Pod was the general manager of the Patriots. I mean, Sammy Morris and Brandon Tate would still be in uniform, and maybe the Jets would have a shot.
No. Sammy Morris would not be on the Patriots roster. What are you talking about? I would have cut Sammy Morris many, many years ago. Old podcast jokes. All right. To email us, and a few of you have, it's nextfanup@gmail.com. Send in those superfan applications. I bring this up right now because we do have one from Craig, who's looking to become the 49ers superfan. Unfortunately, Craig, we do have Charlie, who's represented the 49ers fairly well. But if Charlie cannot perform his duties as the 49ers superfan, we will certainly be in touch with you. And then as we turn back the clock to 2009, a little bit later in today's show, I got this lovely email sent to us, nextfanup@gmail.com. Hey, all, this is Maya, the original Packers superfan chosen by Pod Vader and that original ESPN host. I would be interested in returning to my post if it happens to be open. Maya. Oh, my goodness, Maya. I did reach out and was hoping to try and get him on to help us recap that 2009 Superfan Super Mock Draft. Unfortunately, Maya, Brian also has been performing quite well, repping your Green Bay Packers. So unfortunately the post isn't open, but please do stay in touch, Maya. We'd love to have you on the show again, blend you in with some of these guys who've been around for a while. Andrew, I know you've been around for a while. Greg, you too. You guys are not necessarily of the OGs, but you're pretty close.
Yeah. We weren't there for the 2009 mock draft. I mean, Maybe if I was, the Jets wouldn't have drafted Sanchez, so maybe I should have got it in on a little earlier.
I keep teasing it. It's coming up later on in the show. We've got some more news to get to. We've got franchise tags. And, you know, I don't know if any of these guys are surprises that they got tagged. I think we all sort of expected that these were going to be the guys that were going to get tagged. But let's look at these names anyway. In Baltimore, Justin Tucker, the kicker, gets tagged. And we always joke, the kicker being the franchise player is just it's a misnomer, but we understand why they've tagged him. I mean, is there really other than Gostkowski, as we had this argument on Slack, is there a better kicker than Justin Tucker? Greg,
I don't know. Watching him kick against the Steelers, I don't think so. I mean, he is clutch when the game's on the line, and he hits from distance. Even at Heinz Field, he's been able to hit kicks over 50 yards. I wish that was one, as kickers go, that was the one kicker I wish the Steelers would pick up if they ever could. But, of course, they can't because Newsom's pretty smart there in Baltimore.
I think it's worth noting that when the franchise tag was first put in place, I believe it was like in the 1990s, the reason it was put in place is so players like Troy Aikman wouldn't be able to leave without the team being able to put up a fight. And now, like, kickers are being tagged. I mean, just last year, the Jets franchise, Nick Folk, also, who's also one of the better kickers in the league. I think it's just like a very interesting thing that teams do, like, that tag their kickers. And I'm pretty sure the players' union isn't that thrilled about it either.
Well, I mean, the Patriots have tagged their kicker. I think they've tagged both kickers at one point, Vinatieri and Gostkowski. So it's not like kickers haven't been tagged before. It's, you know, and I agree. The reason why the tag was created was sort of like the Larry Bird rule in the NBA, so that teams could keep their aging free agents. That said, teams have not used that franchise tag for that reason. Cordy Glenn was tagged by Buffalo, and then Buffalo cut Mario Williams, which I think was interesting. Andrew, we were talking about that before we started recording. You'd rather have Cordy Glenn or Mario Williams?
I think it's a clear, you have to look at it through Buffalo's perspective. And if you're looking through their eyes, I think it's a clear choice. You have to choose Cordy Glenn for a number of reasons. First off, Mario Williams and Rex Ryan didn't get along last year. That was clear based on everything that came out in the media. Mario Williams was very upset that he was dropping into coverage on some plays, even though he wasn't dropping as much as he says he was. I mean, if you look at the stats, but like he wasn't productive in the pass rush. He just seemed very unhappy and he had a big salary. And Buffalo has guys like Jerry Hughes, Kyle Williams, and Darius. They have guys on the line that they could afford to let him go. While you look on the other side of the ball, Cordy Glenn was one of the better left tackles in the league, who I actually didn't think, coming out of the draft, I thought that he was going to have to play guard. I didn't think his feet were going to be quick enough to stay at left tackle, and he's proven me wrong. He's been one of the best left tackles in the league. But him and Richie Incognito, who had a great year at left guard last year, both free agents, and it's imperative that Buffalo keep at least one of those guys. So they decided to keep Glenn, and they're going to try and work out a deal with Incognito. But latest reports actually say that Buffalo is actually frustrated that Incognito isn't taking their offer. They sort of feel like Incognito owes Buffalo, that they owe that front office, he owes that front office to a discount just based off the fact that they brought him back after that whole scandal with Jonathan Martin in Miami.
Hmm. Neil, you had some thoughts on Mario Williams, but I think they were in relation to Charles Johnson also getting cut in Carolina. So which pass rusher do you want, Mario, or do you want Charles Johnson?
I'm a big fan of Mario Williams. I think he's obviously playing in Buffalo. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. I think he'll be in Houston before that. I think he's been very underrated ever since he came out of the draft in the shadow of Reggie Bush. I like him a lot. I think if you're a 4-3 team, I would take Mario Williams. I think he's a super pass rusher. Just putting him back into coverage is such a waste. So certainly. Forget Johnson. I would take Williams all day long.
Yeah, and that's worth it. That's a good point Anil made, that Buffalo sort of transitioned to more of a 3-4 look when Rex came this year, as opposed to 2 years ago when Jim Schwartz was the defensive coordinator, and he's known to just rush four and drop back. And Mario Williams had an all-pro year 2 years ago. Last year in the 3-4, he was one of the lowest graded players according to Pro Football Focus. And if you just look at the tape, he just wasn't getting pressure. So if you're a 4-3 team, I don't know, like the Giants, I think the Giants are a good fit for him. I'd be looking at him as a possible bounce back guy.
Josh Norman, speaking of Carolina, was tagged in Carolina. Alshon Jeffrey tagged in Chicago. Von Miller, the only exclusive franchise player, tagged in Denver. None of those guys were surprises. Eric Berry getting tagged in Kansas City seems like a slight surprise to me. That said, I think Eric Berry and Kansas City, that relationship needs to be together, I think, for the career of Eric Berry. What do you say about that, Andrew?
I don't think any of those guys are really surprising. Eric Berry was one of the better safeties in the league last year and probably the best story in the league. I mean, he did win comeback player of the year coming back from cancer. I don't think Von Miller's not a surprise. Josh Norman's not a surprise. Those were two of the top free agents coming into this whole process. And teams weren't planning as if those guys were going to be free agent. Another guy that you didn't mention, who I think is more of an interesting case, is Muhammad Wilkerson from my Jets. He was also tagged. And Wilkerson's a different case because as opposed to Miller or Norman or Berry, I think it's a legit possibility that Muhammad Wilkerson's actually traded to a team. If a team is willing to give Wilkerson the money he wants, which seems to be about $14 to $15 million a year, and give up maybe a first or second round draft pick, I think it's a very big possibility that Wilkerson's traded. I'd ask you guys, if you're a team, would you give up the money and the pick it would take to get a guy like Wilkerson, who has been one of the better players at his position since he came into the league?
No.
See, I would do it in a normal draft year, but this year with how deep the draft is at defensive line, it would be a hard sell this year. But
exactly,
just because it's so flooded this year, and most years it wouldn't be. And for a young guy like him, I wouldn't hesitate in a normal year.
I would have said yes if the young guys the Patriots drafted last year didn't step up and perform so well this past year. I think they're set, and I don't think they've got the money. I don't think they'd want to spend the money on a Muhammad Wilkerson. I think they've
not everything is through the Patriots lens. You know, there are 31 other teams in the league.
You just asked us guys. And so Neil said no, Greg mentioned no, and I mentioned no. So I was just
I meant as the rest of the league, because at the Patriots, the Patriots can't do it because they're up against the cap. I mean, even with the Gerard Mayo retirement, and they caught a couple of guys. Yeah, that's not a move that Belichick is known to make. I'm more asking in terms of the rest of the league, and the other super fans brought up a good point in that of all the drafts, of all the positions in the draft, defensive line is the deepest and at the top and towards the middle rounds. So the Jets are in a weird situation because they have Leonard Williams, they have Sheldon Richardson, Damon Harrison's a free agent, Muhammad Wilkerson wants J.J. Watt money, they franchised him, but they have other guys to re-sign like Chris Ivory, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Bilal Powell. So the Jets are in a weird, weird situation, and I think they're one of the more, I mean, I'm biased, but I still feel like they're one of the more fascinating teams coming into free agency.
I think I recall on the podcast I used to be on last year that the Jets taking Leonard Williams, while, I mean, a great player, I felt like they didn't really need him. And I thought the whole reason why they drafted him was so that Muhammad Wilkerson could hit free agency here. To franchise tag him and not transition tag him like Miami did with Olivier Vernon, I think is a little questionable.
I think that's an interesting thing because that's an interesting point because I really disagree with you on that point. If you're the Miami, you transition tag Olivier Vernon, right? Well, what is it, like $14 million versus, what, 16 if you franchise him? But teams are going to come after Vernon just like they came after Charles Clay last year when Buffalo stole him from Miami. And if you're the Jets, if a team wants to come after Wilkerson and give you a first-round pick, by all means, do it. But you cannot afford to lose Muhammad Wilkerson for nothing. Yeah, maybe you get a third-round compensatory pick next year, but I would rather pay Wilkerson for 1 year and then figure it out next year and have one more year with those four guys, assuming you re-sign Harrison as well. But if you're in Miami, you're most likely going to lose Olivier Vernon, and just to transition tag him and tie up that $14 million in cap space until a team gives him an offer sheet, I don't think it's the most prudent move.
I think maybe one of the issues with your plan there, Pod, for the Jets, was that they didn't realize that Sheldon Richardson was going to become a nut job.
That's also true. Other guys that were tagged: Tremaine Johnson of the Los Angeles Rams of St. Louis, and Kirk Cousins got tagged and then rushed out the door and literally signed that contract in 2.2 seconds because he's getting paid $19.9 million under the franchise tag, and he certainly wasn't going to get that on the free agency market. I've heard talk that Brock Osweiler, who now is the quote-unquote front runner of the mediocre quarterback free agency class, will be getting somewhere around $16 million. And the transition tag, just so you know, for quarterback is $17.6 million. So obviously, it makes sense for Kirk Cousins, but did it make sense for Washington, Neil?
Yes, it did. I think they were probably backed up into a corner and really couldn't do anything else. So they got them slightly cheaper, I think, with that variation of the franchise tag. And yeah, come on. We just need a quarterback. We've got him. We had the cap space because we had to put aside for RG3 pretty much. I think it was $16 million. And Cousins will be nearly 20, so yeah, we can swallow that. Let's see what he can do for this year. If we can get a long-term deal, it's reasonable, tied up before then, terrific. But no, just some stability in the position. We've got to be happy with that. And if I could add about Brock Osweiler, I just don't understand why Cleveland wouldn't go out there and make a really good offer for Osweiler. That could be a good move for them.
I got two cents on Brock.
Go for it.
Sorry, Jay. The point was brought up that he had a Super Bowl winning team that he was quarterbacking, and he couldn't hold on to the job, and you had the corpse of Peyton Manning take the job over and win the Super Bowl. So there's, at least from the Cleveland talk that I hear on a daily basis, there's huge fear that he's, you know, just one of these Matt Flynn-type quarterbacks that, well, the more and more he plays, he'll get exposed. So he's actually ranked as one of the least interested one of the quarterbacks, the fan base here at least, is least interested in bringing in. There's actually been more talk about Fitzpatrick and guys like that.
Hey, stay off. Stay away.
I just look at the draft coming up and I think to myself, well, do you take a punt on Osweiler and then use that second pick for Cleveland on a really top-notch defender or lineman and run with that? Or do you take one of the two quarterbacks who are, well, probably a step below Winston and Mariota from last year? I don't know. So, can it get any worse for Cleveland, really?
So there's a lot of stuff to cover here, and we were just talking about Cousins. I think it's worth going back to that for a minute, because Neil was contemplating re-signing Cousins to a long-term deal, and I think I can't remember a franchise tag that worked better for both sides in this Cousins contract. I mean, I don't think it's a secret if you listen to this podcast that I'm not
like
a Cousins fan.
You like that?
Yeah, he likes his money, and that's why he ran so fast to sign it, because he really only had like an 8-game stretch at the end of the year where he played very well, but still, they didn't beat the Redskins didn't beat a single team with a winning record last year. And I look at Cousins' physical tools, and he's very much like Fitzpatrick in a way that I feel his arm strength is limited, and if you get pressure on him, he's going to make mistakes. And yeah, he's younger than Fitzpatrick, so he definitely has room to improve, but I wouldn't want to commit a couple of years to Cousins. I would want to see him play another year. And as for Osweiler, I actually think he played better than people remember in Denver when he got his shot. I just think that Denver was just going to give the job to Peyton no matter what was going to happen. I mean, Oswald didn't play great, but I don't think he played awful either. And I actually think he played better than Peyton when it came down to it, which is why it's still so surprising to me that the Broncos were able to win the Super Bowl with such shoddy quarterback play throughout the year.
I think when it comes down to the Osweiler-Manning thing, it was pretty apparent in that Chiefs game when Osweiler went off and Manning came on. The Chiefs defense played completely different, as if they had no clue what they were doing or what to expect. And I think that was just the veteran leadership of Manning changing up the way that the defense had to react to him. I think the Chiefs were, you know, they knew what to expect out of Osweiler. Now, Osweiler, from a talent skills position at this point in time compared to Manning, is probably better. I think that's just sort of you go half dozen one, you know, whatever. Let's move on. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Can I have the final word on Kirk Cousins?
Yes, you are the Redskins super fan, so do it.
Thank you. I would just say back to Andrew, two of the positive things which made you think, well, Cousins may actually be a better player than we think. One, he was playing with no running game all season. And I really mean no running game. And secondly, I think Redskins had one of the worst defenses in the league, and he still managed to get points on the board for us. So just two reasons to be a little bit more optimistic about, and back to the
Fitzpatrick comp. It's no coincidence that Cousins played much better when DeSean Jackson and Jordan Reed both came back healthy, and much like Fitzpatrick, when he had Marshall and Decker on the field, also played well. So I think Cousins and Fitzpatrick are both quarterbacks who are more a product of their surrounding talent, or maybe their surrounding talent affects the way they play more than maybe a quarterback like Rodgers or something like that. I mean, and that's a guy I wouldn't want to give three to four guaranteed years at a $20 million salary.
Yeah, right now I think if you shave Ryan Fitzpatrick, he'll just be like Kirk Cousins.
a bunch of guys have been cut over the past week. We're probably not going to make time for all of them. Roddy White cut in Atlanta. Alex Mack will not be opted out, I guess, in Cleveland. That's an interesting situation. I'm looking at a report here that says he might return to Cleveland. Arian Foster was cut literally just hours before we started this podcast. The Chargers cut Donald Brown. Butler was cut as well from the Chargers. I'm sure I'm missing. We've already mentioned Mario Williams, Charles Johnson, Brandon LaFell, Scott Chandler, Patriots that were cut. But who cares about those guys? They're not going to be contributing to any teams. Anybody got jerseys waiting for any of these guys that were just cut within the last week or so?
Alex Mack, come to Washington. We need you.
I'll take Chandler for the Steelers. He'd be a good Heath Miller 1 year replacement.
So you stole my guy, because the Jets are rumored to be going after Chandler. I mean, he's already played for Buffalo and New England, so why not come back to Chan Gailey, who he played underneath in Buffalo, and fill a big hole the Jets have at tight end. I mean, the Jets targeted the tight end the least amount of any team in football last year. So with Jason Morrow coming back from injury, maybe he helps too, but the Jets definitely need to fill that hole.
I don't know about Chandler. All right, so... Chandler, could he be more average?
Yeah, he's an average dude, but like sometimes average is good. It's an upgrade on what you had before.
True.
So as we're going to get into our DeLorean here and head back in time to the year 2009, we revisited the 2015 Superfan Super Mock Draft on the last show. If you've missed that, go check it out right now at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. You can also download and leave us a review on iTunes. That would be fantastic. So those guys revisited 2015. We'll probably revisit a couple more here during the next couple months. I wanted to go back to the very first Superfan Super Mock Draft. And the one thing that I've discovered by doing this is the only original superfan still with us is Jared for the Los Angeles Rams of St. Louis. It's an amazing accomplishment out of you, Jared. Thanks for sticking around. Now, the other thing when it comes to the Superfan Super Mock Draft, which we need the audience to sort of understand here, is that the excursion isn't so much to see who gets the pick right. Like, it's not to see, oh, I got the guy that my team ended up picking. It's to pick the guy you want your team to pick. And so as we go and look back on these picks, which guy got it more right? Was it the Lions GM, who ultimately took Matthew Stafford number one overall? Or was it Randall, who was representing the Lions at the time and took Jason Smith at offensive tackle? I would argue the Detroit Lions' actual pick was the winner there. Anyone disagree?
I mean, as a Jets fan,
no.
who watched Jason Smith play right tackle for like a couple of snaps with the Jets, I'd rather have Stafford, no matter how annoying he is to watch as a Lions fan, considering how inconsistent he is. But yeah, Stafford all day.
So Jared ended up taking Aaron Curry, the quote unquote safest pick in the draft, with the number two pick. That didn't really work out. The Chiefs took Jeremy, who was representing the Kansas City Chiefs, took Michael Crabtree, which is interesting as you look at it, because the Chiefs actually ended up taking Tyson Jackson. So the question is, who won? And I'm leaning towards the super fan on this one.
I agree. I think Crabtree was worthy of the top 10 pick and has played like it. And I'd like to go back real quick to Jared's pick. I think he actually got it right by taking Curry, because the Rams did take Jason Smith. And despite Curry's lackluster career, is still better than Smith's. So
I don't know.
That
but
is,
like,
that's just terrible. That's like watching two bald men fighting over a comb.
Oh, that's
think,
well
I
done.
I think that should be the motto of this 2009 draft, honestly, considering who the first couple of picks have been. And, I mean, off the top of my head, I could think of the other ones who are coming later. And this is not a good draft to look back upon.
Matthew Stafford was eventually chosen by the Seattle Seahawks superfan James. Now, what I love about this pick is, let's think about the Seahawks with Matthew Stafford behind center. To me, that's a wonderful what-if road to go travel down.
Who was the quarterback for the Seattle at the time? Or
it would have been Hasselbeck. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Solid pick, I think.
Aaron Maben was picked by Craig for the Cleveland Browns. Then we have the Bengals selecting Eugene Monroe. And then an interesting scenario happened here with the sixth pick. The Bengals and the Giants announce a trade. This is our super fans. Jeff was our Giants super fan. Matt is our Bengals super fan. Chad Ochocinco is sent to the Giants. Barry Cofield sent to the Bengals. The teams also swap later round picks. How irrelevant were both of those players at this point?
Cofield was actually a pretty decent player at that point. He was very good at getting penetration up the middle. And yeah, I mean, as you can attest to, Pod, I mean, Chad Johnson, Chad Ochocinco, I mean, 1 year later ended up falling off a cliff. I mean, you watch that Super Bowl against the Giants. The Giants were literally playing one-on-one coverage every play. And the only reason Bill Belichick brought Chad in there was because he thought that he'd be able to beat that coverage, and he was just not able to.
Now, Mike, who was our Raiders superfan at the time, went with Jeremy Maclin at wide receiver instead of Darius Hayward Bay. What do you think of that? I definitely an upgrade over DHB.
That Darius Hayward Bay pick was the most Al Davis pick of all time. I still remember laughing hysterically as they took him. I mean, because throughout the whole draft process in these mock drafts, everyone was pegging Hayward Bay to the Raiders, and they would always add sort of an annotation being like, listen, if I was the GM, there is no way I would take this guy because he can't catch, he can't run routes, but he runs a 4.340, so Al Davis is going to take him. And, like, I was thinking to myself, maybe he'll try him. He's reading all this, and, like, he's, like, going to prove him wrong. And yet he still went with him over guys like Macklin and Harvin and Akeem Nix and Kenny Britt. So it's one of my favorite underrated draft moments was the Raiders taking Hayward Bay at 7.
He's a good special teamer, though.
Is that going to be our thing now? In every show, we have to make sure we get in a shot on special teams. I like it if that's the case. Andrew, you didn't have to worry about Mark Sanchez if the Superfan mock draft was the real one, because he ends up getting taken by Anthony representing the Jacksonville Jaguars. Maya, who sent us in an email earlier at nextfanup@gmail.com, took Andre Smith, offensive tackle for the Green Bay Packers. Is that an upgrade? Who'd the Packers end up taking? The Packers ended up taking BJ Raji. Yeah. I might go with the Packers on this one.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both interesting players. They're both interesting players in that from year to year, it seems that they have a solid year and then they fall off a cliff, and they have a solid year again and then they fall off a cliff. And Andre Smith is a free agent this off season, and he's coming off a pretty down year, but in the past he's been very, very good. And the Bengals are going to let him go because they took two tackles with their first two picks last year. So, as a Jets fan with the hole at right guard, at right tackle, excuse me, I would be looking at a guy like Andre Smith maybe to come in on a discount on a 1 or 2 year deal.
Mr. Blindside Michael Orr ends up getting taken for the 49ers. Brian Arakpo, Neil, did not end up on the Washington Redskins. He was selected by Morgan representing the Buffalo Bills. So we wouldn't be having the Mario Williams discussion, I don't think, if Arakpo had been on the Bills. Jake, who represented the Denver Broncos, took BJ Raji. Sergeant Decker, who was the Redskins superfan at the time, took Robert Ayers, as he could not get Brian Arakpo. Josh, who was representing the New Orleans Saints, and it says here, aided by Pod Vader, took Everett Brown. Sorry, Saints fans. I was trying to make your team just as bad as they are today, back in 2009. Mad Mike for the Texans took Clay Matthews. I think Clay Matthews. Could you imagine if we had a Clay Matthews and J.J. Watt combo in Houston? That'd be kind of nice, I think.
That's a great pick, because the Texans took the wrong the other USC linebacker that year, Cushing or something. Matthews would have been much better.
Brian Cushing.
Cushing's a good player, but Matthews is more of a pass rushing type as opposed to Cushing, who's more of a run stuffer. But yeah, the amount of roid rage on that team would go through the roof.
Those three guys. Oh, all right. Next up, we have the San Diego Chargers being represented by Ryan. He took Tyson Jackson, and the 17th pick, Rob, representing your Jets, Andrew, took Malcolm Jenkins at cornerback.
Wow, I thought at that position maybe he would take Josh Freeman. Because that was the whole discussion before that draft, that the Jets need a quarterback. Jets need a quarterback. Would Freeman fall to 17, or would the Jets trade up and get Sanchez? And at the time, the move to trade up for Sanchez was a great move. I mean, if you just think about what they gave up, they moved up from 17 to 5, right? So they moved up into the top 5 from the middle of the first round. They swapped first-round picks. They gave up the 17th pick. They gave a second-round pick, and they gave up three veteran players in Brett Ratliff, Kenyon Coleman, and I'm trying to remember, it was Brett Ratliff, Kenyon Coleman, oh, and Chancey Stuckey, to move up 12 spots. There is no way in this, like, if you look at what the Redskins gave up, what Neil's Redskins gave up to move up 2 spots to get Griffin a couple years ago, like, got 3 first-round picks. The fact that Eric Mangini was the coach of Cleveland at that point was very, very beneficial to the Jets, because he wanted some veteran guys back, and the Jets were able to move up and get their franchise quarterback, who we all know what happened there, but just the opportunity to move up that high and get the quarterback was a very, very unexpected turn of events for the Jets.
So now the 18th pick, Jake is representing the Broncos, and this once again says aided by Pod Vader. Select Ray Maluga, linebacker from USC. The Broncos ended up with Robert Ayers for real. I think I did a better job there for the Broncos. So you could put me in that front office for the Patriots and shove it, Andrew.
Oh, Robert Ayers is a good player.
Better than Ray Maluga?
I mean, no. I'd say so.
No, not for me.
I'd say so at this point. I mean, Maluga gets lost in coverage a lot, and he seems to be in and out of the doghouse every year. But Ayers, at the beginning of his career, Ayers was a very underwhelming player, more of like a run defender type guy. But his past two seasons with the Giants, he's been one of the better pass rushers in the NFC, and he's probably going to get paid this offseason as a free agent.
All right, next up in the Superfan Super Mock Draft of 2009, seems we had problems filling our superfan positions even back then, as once again Pod Vader came in to represent the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to select Larry English. And I guess now I'm eating my words.
Yeah, I think Freeman was a better pick there. So that's tough.
All right. So Randall's back with the Detroit Lions. He took Pierre Jerry, defensive tackle. I think that's a solid pick there for the Lions. The 21st pick, James is representing the Eagles, not Mark Sitko. And he takes Knowshon Moreno, running back, which, you know, the Eagles end up taking.
Alex Mack, I think.
No, the Eagles ended up with Macklin.
They ended up taking Jeremy Macklin. So Macklin wasn't available in the Superfan Super Mock Draft. But Knowshon Moreno, that's...
And was McCoy, was LeSean McCoy in that draft too? Was that the 2009 draft?
Yeah, he was in the second round there.
Oh, so there you go.
Yeah. One of the one picks that was equal, as Neil did a little bit of research and looked, there was only two picks that were the same. The Minnesota Vikings, represented by that Max guy, Percy Harvin, selected by the Minnesota Vikings. Didn't really work out there. Kent, who was representing the New England Patriots and not aided by Pod Vader, took Darius Butler, cornerback from UConn. I actually like the pick. Too bad Butler is now a free agent. So, hey, maybe the Patriots can go sign him.
You got a better Butler now.
Patriots, what's that?
Butler in the second round. I'm sorry.
You have a better Butler now.
That is also true. We do have a better Butler. The Atlanta Falcons, represented by Chris, took Brian Cushing as he was available in the Superfan Super Mock Draft. Matt for the Dolphins took Darius Heyward-Bey. That was not a good pick by him. And Giovanni, representing the Baltimore Ravens, ends up with Akeem Nicks, wide receiver, North Carolina, with the 26th pick in this 2009 draft. I think that's a fairly solid value pick there for the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's sort of sad to see what has happened to Nicks. I mean, he was one of the more dynamic receivers in the league during his first couple of years, and then just injuries hit. I mean, he had some type of blood clot in his leg or some compartment syndrome, and then some other knee injuries. He came back with the Giants last year, and he looked done, and I don't think any team's going to give him a shot. His career is probably over, which is pretty crazy if you think about it. I mean, this is just 2009 we're talking about, and it's just like a very good glimpse into what like NFL players are going through now. It seems like they're retiring earlier and earlier because of just how physical the game has become.
The 27th pick in the Superfan Super Mock Draft, Craig, representing the Colts, took James Laurinaitis, linebacker, which was definitely a position of need, and would have been better than Donald Brown, which is who the Colts actually took. James
it's interesting
is back.
Both of them got cut. It's interesting both of them got cut the last 2 days.
Yes. Laurinaitis, a free agent now as well. James, representing the Eagles, took Eben Britton, offensive tackle. Probably not a good pick there. Jeff, representing the New York Giants, takes Brandon Pettigrew, tight end. It's funny because I always feel like every year, oh, this is going to be Pettigrew's year. This is going to be Pettigrew's year. It's never Pettigrew's year. But I still feel like this year could be Pettigrew's year. I still feel that. It's like every year I'm like, you know what? I think he could do it. I think he could break out this year. It was 2009, Soderberg. Get over it. Steve, who represented the Tennessee Titans, took Vontae Davis. I think that's a good pick there for the Titans. They could certainly use corner and probably better than Kenny Britt. Let's see, Vontae Davis or Kenny Britt?
Vontae Davis. I mean, both of them sort of started off their careers with off-field issues or maybe not grasping the playbook. But Vontae Davis has been one of the better corners in the league the past couple of years, while Kenny Britt has just sort of lingered in St. Louis and catching 600 yards worth of balls a year. Like, nothing crazy.
I think Davis has made the last couple of Pro Bowls, hasn't he? He's been really good, really good.
The 31st pick in the Superfan Super Mock Draft, Ben, representing the Cardinals, did the exact same thing the Cardinals did and took Chris Beanie Wells, and that was a mistake. And the 32nd and final selection for the Superfan Super Mock Draft, Scott, who was representing the Pittsburgh Steelers, Greg, instead of taking Ziggy Hood, took Alex Mack. Your thoughts, Greg?
Yeah, that's like 1,000 times better. Ziggy Hood sucked. So,
hey, Ziggy Hood has just become a great Washington Redskins player, I believe.
Well, enjoy getting blown up for 8 yards off the line of scrimmage. He's horrible.
Well, that's probably 2 yards better than we currently do.
I think it's worth noting. I mean, just one of the things that I've noticed from this mock and also from the real draft, how many running backs went in this draft?
Like at least
4 or 5 went in the first round. I mean, that's definitely the most I can remember in a while. And, I mean, when you look at this year's draft, I mean, there's one definitive guy who's going to be taken in the first round, and Ezekiel Elliott, and maybe Derrick Henry sneaks in towards the end. But it's very interesting. Just 6 years ago, teams were taking running backs in the first round like it was nothing, and I think teams have adjusted to the running back's value.
This was also the draft where there was two centers went in the first round in the real draft. That was the first time for 26 years that had happened, and actually probably the best center in the draft came in the second round. It's Max Unger going to that would be in Seattle, wouldn't it?
Speaking of this year's draft, let's break it down. Let's see what happened in the NFL Combine last weekend and bring in our special guest. All right, it's my pleasure now to bring in our very special guest. It is Scott Wright of DraftCountdown.com. And, of course, he has a podcast by the same name. He's been doing this for a number of years, way more years than I think we've even been doing it. Welcome in, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about what you do over at DraftCountdown.com specifically.
Yeah, absolutely. The site's been around since 1997. I've been doing it full-time since 2003. Just recently underwent a major renovation and upgrade to the site. It's optimized for mobile, etc. I guess what we're most known for is my in-depth mock drafts, where I not only project who I think the teams are going to pick, but I provide quite a bit of analysis on why I think that and also give some alternatives. In-depth player rankings. I think there's probably 600-700 players in the rankings now by position, sleepers, overrated and underrated, top overall. So all that classic stuff you'd expect to see from an NFL draft coverage site, player interviews. So check it out, and I think you'll like it.
Awesome. I know I'm a big fan of it. I know a lot of our super fans are a huge fan of the site. As we get ready to do our super fan, super mock draft, we just revisited 2009, which was a fun year to go back and look at, you know, how the GMs picked and then how our fans ended up picking for their teams. One of the really interesting what ifs that came up was Matthew Stafford on the Seattle Seahawks. That would have been a real interesting time. Matthew Stafford was leading the Seahawks.
Yeah, well, and like I say, there's a very fine line between picking at the top of the draft and winning Super Bowls. Look at the Seahawks found a quarterback in Russell Wilson, and now they're been one of the best teams in the league. And Matthew Stafford just hasn't been able to get it done for the Lions, and they've been picking at the in the top half of the draft basically ever since they brought him in.
It's very true. It's very, very true. So as we get ready for the 2016 NFL draft, the combine just occurred last weekend. There's obviously been a lot of talk on the quarterbacks and the pass rushers. That seems to be where the mainstream media wants to focus all of the attention towards. And in some instances, rightfully so. But what I want to talk to you about are some of the guys that weren't getting a lot of hype that you were looking forward to watching over the weekend, and how did they perform?
Well, one that really kind of stands out for me is Rashard Robinson, the cornerback from formerly of LSU. His freshman year, he looked like a future first-round pick, but then had some off-the-field issues and has basically been off the radar for a couple of years, but he declared for the draft and really tested well. And we expected that. He's 6'1", only 171 pounds, so he's a little slight, but he ran a 4.4, had a 35-inch vertical, and arguably one of the top most talented corners in this class. So I think he put himself in position to maybe even be a day two pick, which is pretty impressive considering he's been out of the spotlight now for so long. So that was one player who stood out that I wanted to get more information on, because that's one thing with the scouting combine, especially in terms of the on-field measurements. And we know for the most part how big these guys are, how long their arms are. We know about how fast they're going to run. There's an outlier here and there, but 90% of the time we can get in the general range. But in the case of Robinson, he was a player that it was kind of an empty notebook on. So that was definitely a player I was looking forward to seeing. So I guess he stands out for me.
You know, we've heard a lot about the slow, quote unquote, wide receiver class this year, at least the way that they timed in Indy. Do you make a lot of that at this particular point in time? Or are you one of those guys, you know, the film really is what's going to tell the story about these guys?
I think the film really tells the story. I really do. And there's some good receivers in this draft, just maybe not as good of a receiver class as we've seen the past two or three years. I mean, we've really kind of been spoiled with 2014 and 2015 with all the great wide receiver prospects. Of course, Laquon Treadwell from Ole Miss is the top wideout prospect in this draft, and he did not run at the combine. He's waiting for his pro day, and I think everyone's eagerly awaiting that, and it's probably going to determine whether he's a top 10 pick or a top 15 pick. Corey Coleman from Baylor is just explosive. I mean, he is a stick of dynamite. But I really like Josh Doctson from TCU, who actually worked out a lot better than expected. That was one of those outliers. We thought he was going to run somewhere 4.55 range. He actually ran 4.4. So I think Josh Doctson helped himself a lot, especially because he's a very polished player all around. It's not like he's just fast. He's a really polished route runner, great hands, ball control, body skills. I think he compares to a poor man's Amari Cooper, really. So I'm a fan of him. Braxton Miller from Ohio State, of course, was probably best known as a quarterback, but I think he's taken to his new position at wideout extremely well, not only during the season, but at the Senior Bowl. I think he's a fringe first-round prospect. But then it kind of drops off. Then I don't think there's going to be the quality of wideouts in round two and round three as we've seen in recent years. And honestly, there's some wideouts in the past couple drafts that if they were in this class, they might go in the first round. So I think you're going to see the value right there in that top 50 range. Late round one, early to mid round two is kind of the sweet spot for the top wideouts in this draft.
You know, as I'm on your site right now and I'm looking at your top picks and specifically your top five, how much separation is there between those guys, Laremy Tunsil, who plays tackle, Jalen Ramsey, who opened up, I think, a lot of eyes at the combine, your number two, Joey Bosa, Miles Jack, Jalen Smith? Those are the guys you currently have in your top five. how much separation do you have between those guys? Because if I'm the Titans, you know, maybe Jalen Ramsey at corner makes a little bit more sense than the offensive tackle.
Yeah, and Jalen Smith's going to be dropping down a little bit based on his medical reports out of Indianapolis that weren't so rosy. But I think I'm very stingy with my elite grade. On an average year, I give it to 1 to 3 players, and it's usually on the lower end of that. This year, I think the two guys that are definitely in the running for it are Laremy Tunsil from Ole Miss, who's my number one player, and then Jalen Ramsey, the defensive back from Florida State. I just think they're pretty special talents. And then I think there's a drop-off. I think Miles Jack from UCLA could maybe get in that conversation, but Joey Bosa, while a very good player, I don't know if I could classify him as elite. But I do think there's a drop-off after Tunsil and Ramsey. To me, they're the cream of the crop here. But Tennessee has let it be known that they are willing to move down, and I think there could be a market for that number one overall pick this year if a team wants to leap ahead of the Cleveland Browns at number two for the quarterback of their choice, which at this point looks like Carson Wentz from North Dakota State. So that's something to keep an eye on. And the Titans could conceivably trade down 10, 12 spots and still get a really good offensive lineman. And who knows what else somebody might be willing to pay, whether it's the 49ers, maybe the Eagles, maybe the Rams. It's just a matter of finding a buyer. We know we have a seller with the Titans at number one, but if I were them, unless somebody just blew me out of the water, I'm just staying there and picking between Tunsil and Ramsey, both of who would fit a need and both who are pretty special talents. But push comes to shove, I think they take Tunsil. You got to protect Mariota.
I know I promised no curveballs, but I think we stumbled on one right at this particular moment. If this was back in the day when there was no rookie cap, so to speak, where they weren't slotted into salaries, do you think a guy like Carson Wentz, who went to a smaller school, would have the opportunity to be picked number one overall?
I think so, just because of the positional value. I think the top quarterback in any draft is going to have that opportunity. But for example, if Carson Wentz was in last year's class, I think he would have been a clear-cut number three behind Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. So I think he's absolutely benefiting from the year that he is coming out of college. But it's not unheard of for a small school quarterback to go in first round. Of course, everybody talks about Joe Flacco, even though he started his college career at Pittsburgh before moving on to Delaware. But that's a more recent example. But you go back to Steve McNair, he went number three overall out of Alcorn State. And I think what Carson Wentz did at the Senior Bowl went a long way towards alleviating any concerns teams might have about the level of competition, because I've been going to the Senior Bowl since 2005, and what I've seen over the years is most times the small school prospects, the first practice or two, it takes them a little while to kind of get up to speed. They're a little nervous, they're adjusting, and they don't have the best performances. Flacco is a perfect example. I remember his first practice down in Mobile. He was just sailing the ball all over the field, just trying to show off his big arm. That didn't happen with Carson Wentz. He came in and looked comfortable immediately, both on the field and off the field. So I don't see Carson Wentz escaping the top five. I think he's going to go either number one or number two. And is he an Andrew Luck level prospect, as some have been speculating? Absolutely not. I mean, we might not see another Andrew Luck level prospect for 20 years, but he's very good. I think he's legitimately should be in the top 10 conversation at any year. He has all the physical tools and intangibles that you look for. And I think if he had USC next to his name instead of North Dakota State, nobody would even question it. But I think what he did at the Senior Bowl, I think is going to be what gets Carson Wentz into that top five.
Nice. I like that. I like that analysis right there. That's what we bring you guys here on Next Fan Up. We bring you the guests who are going to give you that sort of nugget you don't really hear anywhere else. We were talking about the quarterbacks before we started the interview, and you're excited about the depth of this class with the quarterbacks.
I really am. And part of it is just because last year was an historically bad year for the quarterback position. Beyond Winston Mariota, it just dropped off a cliff. I mean, it was really bad. And a lot of the young quarterbacks that won jobs last year as undrafted free agents, I think they're going to be losing jobs this year to this quarterback class. And what I'm excited about is, on day three, you're still going to be looking at one of two things, either long-term developmental projects or long-term backups. But there's beyond the first round guys, that top tier, there are legitimately two or three, maybe even four or five quarterbacks that are going to go between rounds 2 and 5 that have a chance to be starters in the NFL, whether it be Connor Cook from Michigan State, Christian Hackenberg from Penn State, Dak Prescott from Mississippi State, Jacoby Brissett from North Carolina State. But the one I want to highlight, who I really like, is Cardale Jones from Ohio State. And it's kind of a big statement, but I think he might have as much potential as any non-first-round quarterback I've seen. Now, there's a reason he's not going to be going in the first round. There's some risk there as well. But if he hits, you're talking about a top 5, top 10 overall type of talent that you're getting at a bargain point in the draft. And if you're a team like the Eagles, maybe the Rams, who aren't going to be or the Texans, who aren't going to have a chance at the number one quarterback in the draft in the foreseeable future, boy, would I be targeting in on Cardale Jones.
That is very interesting. I was going to ask you if there was a Tom Brady in the bunch, but I think you're feeling it for Cardale Jones here.
I really think it reminds me a lot of a Ben Roethlisberger type of player. And I think as a senior, he struggled a little bit, or not a senior, his final year in college, he struggled a little bit, but it was a new offensive coordinator. I think it was a square peg in a round holes type of situation. I think Cardale Jones' best football is still to come.
You have any of those deep sleeper guys, somebody that's going to get picked late on day 3 that's really going to step up and be a surprise for the team that's lucky enough to draft him?
All right. Let's go with a player I like. He's not really a no-name player, but Tyler Matakavich from Temple. He's one of these linebackers that people are going to write off because he's not big enough. He's not fast enough. He's not a good athlete. All he is a really, really good football player who was extraordinarily productive at Temple, has everything coaches want from an intangible standpoint in a linebacker. And this is going to be a Chris Borland type situation where he's available 3rd, 4th, 5th round. And we're going to look back and say, how in the world was a productive player like Tyler Matakavich available that long? He just doesn't fit that physical prototype. And if he's there on day 3, I think somebody's going to get an instant starter, and it's going to be one of the best values in the entire draft.
Dude, you just hit on my heartstrings, because the Patriots, I think their biggest need is linebacker. It sounds like you just described a prototypical Patriots linebacker.
Yeah, I think he would be a good fit for them. I don't even care. Tyler Matakavich is one of those players for me that I don't even care what type of scheme I run. I'll find a way to fit him in, because he can play a role. Now, is he going to be a superstar all-pro in every situation? No, but even in a worst-case scenario, I think you're getting a backup and a special teamer. And in the right situation, I think he can be one of the more productive linebackers in the league.
I love it. I love it. That's Scott Wright. Scott, where can people find you?
Yep, absolutely. The website is draftcountdown.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter at draftcountdown.
Awesome. And of course, I highly recommend listening to his podcast. Do you drop those weekly?
Multiple times per week. I'm trying to get on a good schedule here. I just relaunched the site, but the goal is I'm going to have 3, 4, 5 micropods a week, kind of one topic show. So I'm going to be talking. We're going to do live mock drafts. I have player interviews on. So cover a little bit of everything. It's kind of cater toward the diehard draft, Nick. If you love the draft as much as I do, check us out.
There you go. Draft Countdown. It's available on Blog Talk Radio, also available on iTunes and wherever you get great podcasts. Thank you, Scott, for joining us on Next Fan Up. Well, we'll talk to you again, I'm sure, as the draft gets a little bit closer.
It was my pleasure. Anytime.
So there was Scott Wright of Draft Countdown. Make sure you check out his podcast. Download it on iTunes, just like you can with Next Fan Up. Leave both shows a review on iTunes. That would be fantastic. We would really appreciate it. Off-season to-do lists are available now on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU podcast, or just search Next Fan Up on Facebook. If you don't see your team's off-season to-do list, that means that position is probably open, and we're going to want you to come join us to participate in the Superfan Super Mock Draft to represent your favorite team. Now, specific teams that are open. We currently have an opening for Buffalo. We have an opening for Cleveland, Tennessee, Denver, Philadelphia, Detroit, New Orleans, Arizona. Those are teams that we are absolutely looking for super fans. And if you are a fan of one of the other teams that was not mentioned, you know, maybe the New York Jets, we'll gladly accept your application, and perhaps we'll even accept it.
I'm not even, it's not even worth the response.
On Twitter, you can tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, we're all on Twitter, but I'm not going to go through a bunch of Twitter handles because we don't have time for that. We're running late as it is. So for Andrew, our Jet super fan, whom I would never cut, Andrew, I couldn't cut you. What would the show be like without you? We'd be lost. We have to have the yin and the yang.
I appreciate that, Pod. But I don't get too close because you know it's as a Jets fan, it's going to be hard for me to hold back when the time comes when you let your guard down.
And I'm sure it's coming. Greg, our Steelers super fan, of course, another fan base where I got to have the yin and the yang there, Greg.
Of course. Hey, real quick, watch out for some Twitter polls we're going to be doing about the draft. We, for the missing openings, we're going to try to get a fan consensus of what the pick should be. So watch out for that.
I love it. I love it. At NFU Podcast on Twitter. And Neil, our Scottish super fan representing the Washington Redskins. Don't really have a problem with the Redskins, Neil. I guess maybe. And I don't really have a problem with Scotland either.
No, Scotland's fine. And I have to say that spending my Thursday evenings with a bunch of Canadians, it's just fantastic.
Well done. Well done. And for everyone else, we'll see you again later this weekend. By the way, our anniversary is coming up soon. We have literally nothing special planned except for free agency, free agency, free agency. So when we're back next week on Thursday, we'll be talking about free agency. And this weekend, be prepared for more visits in the DeLorean to superfan mock drafts of yore. And with that, I say, there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.
Hello, Zachary Soderberg. How are you today?
I am doing well.
Oh, that's great. How is school?
Good.
All right. You're not on the podcast right now, so stop with the pretend broadcasting voice.
Why is Chad Ochocinco going to the Giants?
No, this is an old pretend thing that we did many, many years ago.
Who is this?
The super fans. I have Greg and Neil on right now. Oh, yeah. We're waiting for Andrew.
When you guys had Chad Ochocinco on the Giants?
Okay, no.
How realistic is that?
All right, get out of here. Go do your homework.
Old is he now, Jay?
He's 12. I think we found our post-show nugget.